Michael, thank you very much. This is Saturday with Claire Byrne. We'd be delighted to hear from you today on any of the topics we're about to cover on the programme. 51551 is the text number. You can also email us, saturday@rte.ie. The Twitter address is @SaturdayRTE. I'm joined today in the studio by John McGuinness, Fianna Fáil TD, and Chair of the Public Accounts Committee. Simon Harris, Fine Gael TD, is also with us, and Simon is a member of the Public Accounts Committee. The legal editor with Independent News and Media, Dervil MacDonald, is here too. And Mick Wallace TD is on the line, and we'll be speaking to him shortly. We'll have others joining us throughout the next hour also. But first, we're going to start with a story that you may have heard in the news just now. A government spokesperson has confirmed that the Taoiseach and Tánaiste are today discussing the contents of that dossier, which alleges Garda mishandling of murders, assaults and abductions. Signs are that an inquiry may be set up to examine the claims. Dervil, do you expect that that inquiry will happen?
I think it depends on how much of a temperature they take of the level of public suppose anxiety or about it. I think that a kind of inquiry, not an ad hoc non-statutory inquiry, because the Irish public have come to expect when there is a major scandal, whilst they don't want tribunals, what they do want is confidence in an inquiry. And the kind of compromise that was reached in the wake of the tribunals was a commission of investigation. People do, for whatever reason, like to see a judge in that role. They like to see somebody with full powers of the High Court, such as compellability of witnesses, rules around discovery, immunity of witnesses and all of those other issues. So I think that they will take the temperature possibly today, and because this has overtaken GSOC, actually the bugging now seems the inferior, the baby scandal compared to this latest one, which is the dossier. And it will be very, very interesting to see whether or not they do go for a much, much more formal inquiry. Last week, when it was announced that the retired High Court Judge John Cook was going to set up this was going to oversee this non-statutory inquiry, it was a very, very, very lukewarm reception to that. It will be interesting to see whether they will go for a formal inquiry, especially in circumstances as I was reporting this morning, that the government is seeking to strike out a case brought by Lorcan Roach Kelly, who is the late, who is the husband of the late Sylvia Roach Kelly, who was murdered in 2007 by somebody who was released on bail. The case was due to come before the High Court on Monday, but both sides have agreed to a consent to adjourn the case because the state has brought a preliminary application to strike that out. So it's interesting.
On what grounds do we know?
Well, we don't know what grounds. It's not unusual for the state to fight cases, but it's interesting. We did lead on it in this morning's Irish Independent, because one of the big issues there, because obviously Gerry McGrath, who was ultimately convicted of Sylvia Roach Kelly's murder, was out on bail at the time that he killed her. And well, I suppose what could be potentially very damaging to the state could be the discovery in that case and looking back. But I suppose the reason why it's important is that that case is contained in the dossier of files that was handed to the Enda Kenny by Micheál Martin.
That's the only case that we know about. I mean, obviously there will be situations where individuals might be compromised if we had more detail, but we're not sure what else is in there at this stage.
We don't, and I think the important thing to bear in mind at this stage, even though there's been a huge rush to judgment by a lot of individuals, including Minister Shatter in the course of the last fortnight, is that these are just allegations. But I think that it's not so much what has happened in the last 2 weeks, it is the way that the government has reacted, the way they've been handling it. And I think that, you know, that what really was striking for me this week was that Taoiseach Enda Kenny commended Micheál Martin for giving him the dossier and said they were very, very grave and very, very serious allegations. And we're talking about, you know, ministers tripping over themselves in the last 48 hours to show their confidence in Alan Shatter. But for me, that was quite a strange vote of confidence, because Enda Kenny was conceding that here was very, very serious, grave allegations. And it turns out that Alan Shatter, according to the transcript read into the Dáil Record this week between Oliver Connolly and Sergeant McCabe, who's the Garda whistleblower, it turns out that Alan Shatter had these allegations, this dossier, 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And whatever about saying, well, look, this dossier, the files relate to offences or to a period of time between 2007 and 2009. It was 2 years ago that the current Justice Minister was handed this dossier. It is very important to stress that they are just allegations, but it has done an awful lot to inflame the public, to make them very, very concerned. And I suspect that they may, on balance, maybe opt for a commission of investigation or a formal inquiry to subdue that public concern.
Simon Harris, what do you say to that? That's the big question facing Alan Shatter today, isn't it? He had this for 2 years, we believe, and did nothing, it would seem, about it.
You see, I think we're jumping the gun by presuming that he did nothing about it. And that's, I think, where some people have decided to write the conclusions before actually going through the process and establishing exactly what happened. Even Minister Shasher's political opponents would not accuse him of being inattentive or lazy. And I find it very difficult to believe that Minister Shasher wouldn't have acted on this. I think what Minister Shasher has done, and indeed what the Taoiseach has done, in initiating an immediate review of all correspondence between the Garda whistleblower Sergeant Maurice McCabe and the Department of Justice, is the prudent course and the most expeditious course of action in terms of doing exactly what Derval thinks quite rightly we need to do, which is establishing and re-establishing confidence in the entire administration of justice. I think there's been evidence even on internet websites in the last couple of days, most recently yesterday, where letters are appearing that have been sent from the Department of Justice to Sergeant McCabe, which seem to infer, if you read them, that there was certainly correspondence back and forth between the minister's office and the department and the whistleblower. So I think the suggestion that Minister Shasher had this information and did nothing with it is very hard to believe.
The penalty points issue.
No, not at all. I very much take the point in relation to the penalty points issue. But there is, again, we're only seeing in a drip-drip fashion what appears on the internet and what certain people have decided to put into the public domain. And that's why it's important we allow Minister Shasher to put all the documentation together and give us an overview. But there's documentation online on Department of Justice headed paper that very clearly states that they had been back in touch with Sergeant McCabe on other matters. But look, we need to establish the facts very quickly.
Okay,
on this
can I ask you about what Michael Noonan intimated yesterday, and he was quite forthright actually in his statement. Do you think Alan Shatter's being set up by Fianna Fáil?
I certainly hope not, and I would share the Taoiseach's view that Deputy Micheál Martin took the absolute correct course of action when you come into such possession of such important information, which the Taoiseach described as grave. I think, in fairness to Deputy Martin, and let's not play politics with this, I think he took the absolute correct action in handing it over to the minister.
But Michael Noonan said that if anything did happen, it happened on the last government's watch.
I think the point Minister Noonan may have been making, it's not for me to try and guess, but the point that I would make is we believe that these allegations and crimes referred to in the dossier, and as you correctly say, we only know of one case, happened between the period of 2007 to 2009. Now, Minister Shatter obviously wasn't the Minister for Justice during that period of time. The question that we need an answer to, and it's a really very important question, was 2 years ago the first time that concerns about these investigations were brought to the attention of the authorities? And I'm not playing politics with this either, but did the Department of Justice previously know about this? Had complaints gone to GSOC before that? Had complaints been made to the Garda Commissioner before that? We do need to establish, because this can't be just about, you know, caricatures and people wanting to nail stuff on Alan Shatter. This has to be about the process. If people were concerned about very grave concerns, as the Taoiseach describes them, in relation to serious crimes that happened between 2007 and 2009, when was the first time they came to light?
Well, we know
and
that
did
Mary
past
Lynch
ministers know as well?
We know that Mary Lynch raised the issue of the man who went on to kill Sylvia Roach Kelly. She raised that with GSOC. We know that, but yes. But dates, as you say, may not be clarity around that yet. John McGuinness, as I said to Derval before we came on air, it's kind of difficult to know where to start. But how problematic for you is the minister's handling of all of this?
Well, first of all, I would take issue with Michael Noonan. I think that it was a poorly judged statement that he would have linked this back, as is the normal course now in things to do with the economy, to the last administration or some other administration.
He's right, though, isn't he?
He's right in the sense of the timing of the incident. He's not right in the sense of where it went after that. The information was given to the authorities in the last two years. That's a fact. So let's leave the politics to one side. Micheál Martin got the information from Maurice McCabe. He sent it on to Enda Kenny. He was right to do that. There are very serious allegations contained in those documents. And I believe that Derval has outlined what is now needed to be done, which is a very independent inquiry into this that can compel witnesses, that can find fact, and that can restore the confidence in the system, because the public now lack that confidence. Now, if you leave the allegations, and we'll call them that for the moment, of Maurice McCabe to one side, well, no, let's take one allegation that he made, which was through the penalty points. And he was rubbish for a long period of time. He sent him to various agencies and authorities and nobody acted upon them. We didn't know, Simon or I didn't know, until he appeared before the Public Accounts Committee, that in fact it was he who gave all of the information to the Comptroller and Auditor General, who did a very independent report and found a huge amount of failings within the system itself and found wrongdoing within the system. Now, everyone was nervous, afraid. They were seeking legal advice and so on. When we mentioned that we would bring Maurice McCabe before the Public Accounts Committee, and we held it in private. And he proved to be a very credible witness. He did not name names. He did not do anything that people expected him to do. He was constructive, and he gave, if you like, a narrative to the background of all of this, and was very sensible and constructive in his approach. Now, we now he then applied to the committee for a transcript of that hearing. And I believe that the CPP should acknowledge the letter from his legal advisor and should give him the transcript. That's a separate issue. But then let's leave that to one side and let's take one case which has been in the public domain. And that is the case of the death of Shane O'Farrell. If you read the documents in relation to the death of Shane O'Farrell, which Alan Shatter has had for the last 18 months, they are absolutely shocking. Shocking in relation to the investigation by the guards, shocking in relation to how they were treated through the whole justice system and the outcome itself.
Well, give us an idea of what you mean.
When you're given the litany of well, for example, the person involved that killed Shane O'Farrell, he was on bail. His passport was in the Garda station. He was suspended sentence both sides of the border. He was driving a car that night that had no NCT, no tax, no insurance. He falsified documents later to get insurance on that car.
Is this case in the dossier that Micheál Martin has given to
the Taoiseach? No, I'm saying if the information in the files given does not contain this report. But what I'm saying to you is that outside of the complaints made by whistleblowers,
there are others.
There is this complaint. There are others. And they are not just significant. They are overwhelmingly, anyone reading the file would demand an inquiry into all of this.
Is this a political problem or an internal guard
no,
problem?
No, I'll tell you what it is. It's this particular woman, as in many other whistleblower cases, they've gone through the process. They've gone through their confidential recipient and their ombudsman and all of the rest of it. And another whistleblower will come forward in the course of this week with further information.
This is somebody that you're
someone that I have spoken to today. So the system has failed them. It is a system that has failed them. And then they turned, as I said last week in the Dáil, to the political process. And they said, for God's sake, can you help us? There is something really serious going wrong here. And they send piles of files and information to political figures and leaders.
And nothing
and
is
no
done.
No action
you're
is taken, okay, none whatsoever.
Very quickly,
that's what I find shocking.
Well, what I was going to say is, I cover as legal editor of the Irish Independent, I've covered for the best part of 10 years, if not more, the criminal justice system. And there are many, many problems with it from the very, very beginning, from the commission or the investigation of a crime, right up to and including, conviction or not. And there are serious problems in the system. But I don't think we should need to get ourselves necessarily bogged down with that, because what this issue was about was that when people did have a problem, who did they turn to? How was it dealt with? And the Garda Síochána Conn Act, which was introduced in 2005, which set up the Garda Síochána Ombudsman Commission in the wake of the Maurice Tribunal, in the wake of everything that was alleged to have occurred in Donegal, was meant to be there as a safety net for the public interest. It was scuppered, in my view, from the outset, from the very, very outset of the of its inception. And, you know, when you compare, I'm from the north, and you compare our ombudsman system compared to the north, where there are even more security concerns up north, and yet there is no, that act did not allow oversight of the Garda Commissioner and his activities. So there is a real, and that's where the political problem is. And the problem for Alan Shatter when this crisis emerged was he aligned himself fully with the Garda or with the Garda Commissioner to the exclusion of everyone else, including GSOC and by extension the public interest. Simon spoke earlier about some people having the need to
move on,
Dermot, and Alan Shatter did.
Okay, we'll come back to that in a moment, because I want to come to Mick Wallace, who's on the line, Simon, and then I promise I will come back to you. Mick Wallace, we were talking, or John McGuinness was talking earlier on, about people who were shouting from the sidelines and not being heard by anybody. Now, you must feel a bit like that this week, because Micheál Martin went in with the conversation, the transcript between Oliver Connolly, the confidential recipient, and Sergeant Maurice McCabe. And he was heard and listened to, and there was definite action taken afterwards. You'd already brought that to the attention of the Houses of the Oireachtas.
Yeah, but I'm still glad that that Micheál Martin has got the attention he has, because it has obviously brought the whole story more into the open. Yeah, we first put it on the Dáil Record on the 4th of December 2012. And I mean, but there's been a lot of things happened since we initially raised the penalty points issue in the chamber. And we also spoke about the fact, because Maurice McCabe and John Wilson had highlighted to us that they had been trying for a long time to actually raise issues of some serious malpractice and corruption within the force, and were meeting stone walls. Now, I mean, I think Derville's point is very right, because the big problem here is how it has been dealt with. It isn't so much what stories are out there. I mean, we set up these Red Cow meetings because there were so many people bringing us with terrible atrocities and unbelievable stories. And we ended up having about five meetings. There was between 30 and 40 people with a story there for each meeting.
In relation to the Gardaí?
In relation to the Gardaí, and it is frightening stuff, right? And I mean, we brought somebody, we held a press conference in December 12, we had a press conference in May 13, we had a press conference in July 13, and we raised loads of these issues. In July 13, we actually brought eight of these people in to tell their horrific story, but the media wasn't interested. And only last October 17, 2013, a whole group of these people, there was 28 of these people with their stories, who actually put their stuff in a file, got a sworn affidavit, and they handed them in at the Department of Justice. Now, the media didn't turn up that day either, even though we flagged it well. But, I mean, what is really striking for us all the time is, okay, obviously, when we brought the story up first, Minister Shatter rubbished us, and he attacked us rather than dealt with the story. The two whistleblowers were severely warned very quickly. As early as December 12, a confidential Garda memo to all members of the force was sent out warning them, do not release any Garda info to external parties or there'll be repercussions for you. This is called cover-up. This was the top priority. There wasn't a priority to find out what actually is going on. There was a priority to cover it up. And I mean, sadly, right, in the last 18 months, from what I can see, Minister Shatter has been deciding matters based not on his ministerial responsibilities to justice, but based on political motivations and his own political survival. I mean, he wouldn't do the independent inquiry into the penalty points because it was going to reveal too much. He does an internal inquiry, which was a whitewash. He does the GPSU, the Garda Professional Standards Unit, has done a report, and he has ignored the stronger recommendations in it. He rubbished just about everybody that came along. He wouldn't let GSOC look into the Roma children. He wouldn't let GSOC use Section 106 to look at Corrib gas again. He wouldn't give, despite the horrific report that GSOC came out with in the summer on the Kieran Byland report, he still would. They sat down in September 13 and came up with a new protocol. But did he give them access to Pulse, which GSOC were begging for? No, he didn't.
Why do you think that's the case, Mick?
Well,
why? I mean, if you're saying that the minister has aligned himself, as has been suggested previously, to the Garda Commissioner and not to GSOC, why do you think that's the case?
Well, I mean, obviously he is. We don't have oversight of our police force in Ireland. GSOC was set up, but with GSOC, right, they only have the power to address individual complaints from the public into individual members of the Gardaí. The minister, despite all his protestations, he still refuses to allow them to use Section 106 to look at the practices, policies and procedures of how the force works. He has never allowed a root and branch review of how the force works. They still don't print or publish their code of practice. We don't even know if they're human rights proof, because we don't know what rules they're working to, because they don't publish them. Listen, when eventually at this stage, the penalty points now, GSOC are getting to look at it under Section 102. Now, this allows them to look into some Garda behaviour. It still doesn't allow them to look at the practices and policies and procedures, but he only gave it because of political pressure, even though he still doesn't give the 106 to allow a greater review.
Okay, but this just tells us that the Garda Ombudsman Commission is just stymied by the legislation that governs it as opposed to anything else.
It is, yes. And I mean, I would have a lot of sympathy for GSOC because they haven't been allowed to operate like they should. And I mean, the minister is consistent again now with the review he has set up. I mean, he doesn't want to use the Commission of Investigation Act 2004, which would give them it would give somebody like a judge proper judicial powers. He's setting up a judge now to do a review, but he's not giving them judicial powers. Mm-hmm. He isn't going to be able to compel people to do anything. He isn't going to be able to enter and seize any documents.
And there's no compellability there.
No,
Mick, I'm just going to stop you there because I want to bring Simon back in, Simon Harris, because I did promise I would come back to you,
Thank
Simon.
Thank you very much. Thanks, and there's been quite a lot said there. Absolutely, there's a need for oversight of the guards, but there isn't a need, and nor can it be tolerated for politicians and members of the Oireachtas to act as judge and jury. And I think you'll see a contrast with what some members of the Oireachtas have done, and in fairness to Deputy McGuinness and other members of the Public Accounts Committee, which I'm on, the way we dealt with the whistleblower. It is important to ascertain the facts. What's not appropriate to do, in my view, and in fact in the views of the rules of the House, is to come in to the Oireachtas and name people and smear their good name.
Are you saying because, that's what Mick Wallace did?
Well, I'm saying that I think the appropriate way to report accusations is to meet with people in committee structures, is to pass on information to the relevant authorities, to pass on information to the Taoiseach, as was done this week, rather than having a situation whereby you just name people without knowing the full evidence of the case. Because that's what we found at the Public Accounts Committee, that it's very difficult to determine whether somebody's points were penalty points were cancelled on legitimate grounds or not illegitimate grounds, and certainly by just seeing a list of people's names and presuming because they were cancelled.
But are you saying to Mick Wallace now, look, we didn't listen to you because you went about this the wrong way?
No, I'm certainly not saying that, though I do believe they went about it the wrong way. I'm saying that the government did listen, and I'm saying that the O'Mahony report was carried out by Assistant Commissioner O'Mahony, and the Controller and Auditor General's report, which we've looked at the Public Accounts Committee, has also looked at the matter.
And we know those reports differ greatly.
And the Public Accounts Committee is now in the process of preparing a report on the issue, and the Minister has allowed GSOC to carry out an investigation in the public interest as well. But where I do agree with Deputy Wallace, and I think with everybody else on the panel here, is that there is a need to really beef up the powers of GSOC. And in fairness to the Minister for Justice, he recognised that before this dossier came into the public domain. And he has made it very clear that he intends to allow GSOC access, unfettered access to the Pulse system for investigations. I think that's a really, really important thing. And he has said that he's open to the idea of serving guards being able to report things directly to the Ombudsman Commission. Because to be quite frank, and I'm not criticising Sergeant Maurice McCabe for sending the Public Accounts Committee the information that he did, because I think it was useful information in the public interest. But it is
right.
But
it is.
But let me just make this point.
You say all that. Simon. You say all that, right?
Yes, sure.
That Minister Shatter wants to give GSOC additional powers. But over the last couple of weeks, he's undermined that organisation.
But I will answer that. But I just want to make the point that it's not appropriate that whistleblowers feel that they can't access the Ombudsman, that they have to stick things in a box and send them to members of the Oireachtas. They should have direct access to the Garda Ombudsman Commission, so that their investigations. I don't believe the minister has undermined GSOC in any way.
He came on part time and said that Simon O'Brien told him one story and then told the committee another story.
The minister read a story in the Sunday Times, which is the first time the minister heard of any concerns about the bugging of GSOC. The minister did what I think was entirely appropriate, which was invite GSOC in to brief him on the situation.
He's not in charge of GSOC. No, the Houses of the Oireachtas is the only organisation.
He asked for a briefing. He then addressed the Dáil and he took questions for 4.5 hours.
He's not the boss of GSOC.
Would he have
brought Emily O'Reilly in?
I think it's perfectly appropriate for a government minister to seek a briefing or an update. He didn't summon them or request them or demand that they come in. He did, as minister, he wanted to ascertain the facts, which is really important because if you want more powers for GSOC, it's the Minister for Justice, who, as the minister with Lyme responsibility, who's going to be charged with that. So I think the minister took prudent action. But the minister only heard of this, like most of us, certainly like me, on the front page of the Sunday Times.
But GSOC wasn't obliged, and we know now, to tell the minister anything about this.
We do. That's true. They weren't obliged. Yeah. But it was useful that the minister was
brief, despite what the Taoiseach told us.
Otherwise, yes, you'd be asking the minister questions.
Could I talk about
Mick? Mick, you want to come in and then... Just your headphones there, John. Sorry. Mick, carry on. Yep, and then we'll come to John McGuinness.
It is a complete fallacy to say that the minister wanted to strengthen Taoiseach before now. We brought in a police bill in July, and we addressed all the weaknesses with Taoiseach and why it couldn't work as an oversight body. And the minister rubbished it, and he says there's no need, he says, to do any more. We don't need any more oversight. He said it. Look at his document. I only read it again last night. He says we already have excellent oversight of how our police force works. He says GSOC was set up and is allowed to look into any malpractice. He says we have the Garda inspectors and they are a great body. Now, the Garda inspectors are a good body, but they are not allowed to do anything unless it is initiated by the Minister for Justice.
Okay.
And GSOC are not allowed to oversee the Garda Síochána. They are not allowed to even look at the Commissioner.
Okay.
They are not allowed to look at the policies, practices and procedures. And the Minister didn't have an appetite for giving them any oversight power.
Okay,
that
Mick,
is the truth.
Mick, time is moving on. I want to let John McGuinness back in on this. And then
what Mick referred to earlier on is actually quite true, that there is a culture within the state that runs right across every department and agency that upholds the system itself against any legitimate complaint or any complaint of any kind. And until such time as that culture is broken, we're going to continue to have whistleblowers that are beaten down and put into bad health by the way they're treated by the system, by the country, by the state. And that's added to by the fact that in this case, Minister Shatter, who I think he took a very wrong decision by supporting one side of the argument in terms of the Commissioner, and the legislation was wrong. Any independent body needs to be just that. And it needs to be so independent that it can turn around to the Minister and say, I'm sorry, we're not going to your office. We have an independent job to do here and we are going to do it. Separate to that, you have to ask yourself why all of this information, having been sent to the different agencies, was not dealt with. It wasn't dealt with by the political system.
Simon Harris, you'd probably argue that we don't know that. 18 months
in terms of Shane O'Farrell's case and 2 years in the case of others. And the penalty point system would never have been challenged were it not for the fact that Maurice McCabe came forward and gave his evidence to the Comptroller and Auditor General.
By the way, John,
who gave a report that was independent and condemned the system.
I want to ask you whether you agree with what Simon said, that Mick Wallace and his colleagues in the independent group, what they did was bring it up in the wrong way. And if it had been done differently, perhaps we would have been dealing with this issue months ago.
Anyone that brings it up the way Mick Wallace did and Claire Daly did, and I admire them the way they did it, is dumped upon by the system. That's the reality. That's the reality. You become a John the Baptist, and there's a lot of them over in the dark crying in the wilderness. But what legitimised all of this was when Micheál Martin took the evidence and declared that he was interested in this, and he put it before the minister and the Taoiseach. Up to then, let's be honest about it, up to then, there was no effort by any senior politician in this country to respond to the very serious allegations that are contained in all of those documents.
All right, Dermot.
But Claire, isn't that in some respects the greatest indictment of the system, that it takes that kind of political show trial tactics in order to get an issue onto the political agenda? Simon spoke earlier about some people have decided to write the conclusions. The big mistake Alan Shatter made, in my view, in the last 2 weeks is that he wrote the conclusions. He wrote them within days. He sided himself with the Garda Commissioner and decided that everything else was guilt.
Is this the GSOC issue you're referring to here? This is initially on the GSOC issue.
But on GSOC and this, you know, look, I mean, everybody sings off the same hymn sheet and says we need oversight. But that's a question of degree as much as kind. GSOC has been stymied not just by the legislative restrictions. It's also been stymied by a culture. And it's a culture of non-cooperation within the Gardaí that goes from the top and filters right down. And there has been a huge problem, even with the restricted laws that it has and in having that kind of a culture. We don't have oversight of the Commissioner, his office and his functions. And I just wonder, has it gone too far? Because we now have to go back and devise new protocols and give them powers. But will it be any, will it be effective? Will that oversight be effective if you have those two entrenched positions? And I think that that is a huge, huge problem, because at the end of all of this, I wonder as a citizen, if I had a problem, could I in confidence go to GSOC? Could I in confidence go at this stage? And has that been the biggest political mistake, that the state aligned itself and attacked, in my view, an independent statutory body that was there to serve the public interest?
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. Back with more after this. Welcome back to the programme. Just a reminder of who we have today. Simon Harris, Fine Gael TD for Wicklow. John McGuinness, Fianna Fáil TD for Carlow Kilkenny and Chair of the Public Accounts Committee. Dermot MacDonald, Associate Editor and Legal Editor. We were talking to Mick Wallace TD before the break, and he mentioned the Garda Inspectorate. The Garda Press Office have been on to us to assure us that the Garda Síochána Inspectorate looks at Garda policies and procedures, and all of their policies are human rights proofed. So we are glad to clarify that. The Public Accounts Committee, and as I said, John is here, will hear from the Chief Executive of Rehab, Angela Kearns, next week after it was revealed that she's paid €240,000. Members of PAC have been calling for complete transparency in relation to all executive salaries at rehab. And I suppose, John, that the question is, just clarify for us where PAC is going with all of this next week, because there has been a bit of a lull, if you like, and just remind people where we're at and where you're going.
Well, as part of the review of the Section 38, in terms of the funding, the payment to their executives, how they spend that money and so on. And now we're moving to the Section 39s.
And how do Section 39s get their money?
Under that, the Section 39 organisations get their money directly from the Central Exchequer, a lot of it. For example, they would get money from Justice, they would get money from Solace or FOSS, what it used to be, and Education. And what we have to do is to examine the accounts, and Rehab is one of the biggest organisations within the Section 39 grant system.
And it gets
how
much?
They would receive €82 million last year, and over the years they would be receiving similar amounts of money. Now, the issue then in relation to salaries was something that was dealt with Rehab, say, by the outside body who checked on their remuneration and benchmarked them and so on. The Public Accounts Committee would like to see that document. They would like to understand how these salaries are set, how pensions are set and so on. So next week, the Rehab group will be there. We've asked for the previous CEO, Frank Flannery, to be there present also. And we've asked for the various accounting officers from Justice, from Health, and from Solace, so that they can, if you like, give us an overview of the accounts, and then we move then to Rehab to see how they actually spent that money, and we get them to account for it.
Can you get down to the nitty-gritty of salaries, though, if you're just looking at the €83 million in total?
Oh, we can, because it all has an impact. We need to get an overview of the Rehab group, how they set their salaries and how they spend their money.
Even though it's a hybrid company.
Even though it's a hybrid company. Because if money is going in there, well, then surely the body giving them the money, which is the government, should have a general understanding of how all of this salary structure is set and how the money is spent. So it is a hybrid. I understand that. And the members of the Public Accounts Committee understand it. But they also understand that they have to get a complete or a direct line of vision on all of this stuff, so that they understand it clearly and determine that the €82 million is needed or was needed, and that it has been spent for the correct purposes.
I ask only because of some oversight of the litigation between Rehab and the department, you know, and it's one of the sensitive issues in terms of, you know, they say they're a commercial company. What strikes me just about all of this and the charities coming in is that really where was the robust checking beforehand? Because at the end of the day, these Section 38, Section 39s, it's public money. We shouldn't be going back ex post facto wondering where it all went and how it's all accounted for. And
that's,
I think,
really
that's
valid point. It's extraordinary. Extraordinary that there wasn't more oversight.
It shouldn't have taken this. It shouldn't have taken CRC and everything else to go with it for the state to suddenly go, well, you know, and I'm delighted. I'm actually delighted the Public Accounts Committee is doing it. But it seems for me, I've been kind of stuck in Anglo and other issues, but it seems bizarre that the state will come in as this kind of champion of the public interest when they should have been doing it all along.
Well, it's a little bit cultural in the sense that we've allowed a number of our health services and disability services effectively be farmed out to agencies, many of which are doing a very, very good job on the front line. But the reality of the situation is the state has historically nearly seen its role as we write the cheque, hand it to you, and you provide the service, and off you go. And that has allowed a culture to develop where we've seen fiefdoms nearly created. I mean, the worst example we saw was the CRC. But this issue, and Derval is correct from a legal point of view about the hybrid of, you know, some charities being somewhat commercial and somewhat a charity. You can't be a little bit a charity. And, you know, there has to be a status and an onus and a responsibility attached to each agency that's given charitable status and that's given Exchequer funding. Now, the establishment of a regulatory structure for the first time ever, long overdue, should help with that. But I think we nearly have to start having a national debate about what exactly is it to be a charity? Can you be overwhelmingly commercial and have a little bit of a kind of charity wing to your work? Or if you receive 1 cent of taxpayers' money for charitable purposes, shouldn't you have to declare your salary and everything
else? Does that mean the state can go in and look at all of the other activities if it's only a portion of it? These are key issues.
Yeah, and I mean, is it appropriate to be commercial and a charity at the same time? I think that's a very serious question.
You brought right to the forefront of my mind the St Vincent's Hospital group there when you talk.
I'm livid, as I think many members of the Public Accounts Committee are, about the St Vincent's group, and I'm pleased that the HSE is taking a hard line with the CEO salary scale, but I'd be extremely frustrated if that's where it stops.
Has a deal been done, by the way, between the HSE and the St Vincent's group?
Well, we understand that.
Simon raised an important point in relation to St Vincent's, the last PSE meeting, which is, yes, we focus on the salaries, but there is a huge governance issue in relation to St Vincent's, public, private and so on. And then if you come back to rehab, they're sort of public-private as well. Well, if the public purse is funding that type of money, we have a right to know how all of the salaries are set, what activities are going on. And if they're that profitable, well, then why are they asking for 82 million? Or what are they doing in relation to the other monies that they're getting? Now, CRC was an example in point where Section 38, Section 39 have never been audited by the HSE or by the old health boards. And it's an outrageous lack of proper administration of taxpayers' money when that happens. Now that it's happening, they have to roll back on all of the legal arrangements that they've made based on salaries and so on. But as I've said, the taxpayer needs to know and must know, and that's what the Public Accounts Committee is doing. And the next issue will be, yes, St Vincent's, St Michael's was an agreement reached last week that we'd invite all of them in just to understand this. And remember this, as rehab or CRC resist in ways to give information, they're damaging that sector.
I don't understand why, John, there was such resistance in the case of rehab and Angela Curran's salary. There was only a 6,000 euro bump from when we last found out what the figure was.
But the amount of publicity that they received in relation to that, and the amount of angst created with those that are employed, who are on very, very low salaries, and they're seeing this being played out in the public domain. Clarification was needed. It should have been brought straight into the public domain. It should have been explained without anyone having to be dragged to the Public Accounts Committee. And that was the case with CRC. Now we have to wait on a full report from CRC and then go back to it all over again. Simon made a point as well, which is to ask about a public debate or conversation around the charities. And what's emerging from all of this is that very point and a conversation about, and we've had it with the guards and their independence and so on, is the independence of the Comptroller and Auditor General's Office and the Public Accounts Committee and empowering them and giving them the staff necessary to do the job. Yeah. That's not happening either.
I think that the risk with the Section 38s and the Section 39s, and I think the good work that the PAC is collectively doing, is that the media attention and indeed the public interest will understandably be about who's getting paid what. And it's an important public policy question, but it's not the only one. And if you look at the St Vincent's healthcare group as a situation, you have no board of the public hospital there. So you have one board looking after the public and private. You have one CEO who has to exchange hats at board meetings from public and private. You had a situation where the public lands were mortgaged to pay for a private commercial facility. You have a situation where the same directors are directors of the fundraising arm, the St Vincent's Foundation, as are the directors of the commercial board.
Who are the investors in the private hospital? Is that not also a question that needs to be examined?
Yeah, and indeed the qualifications and backgrounds and business interests of people on the various boards as well. But like, I remember when I asked the CRC how you are you elected to the board, they describe themselves as self-electing. I mean, what that's an oxymoron. It's a lovely concept that John and I would probably enjoy. But, you know, what is it to be self-electing? We need to see things like term limits, you know, rotation of offices, publicly advertised AGMs.
But why so only now, Simon? You know, because at the end of the day, we're talking about governance. This is governance from a state perspective.
Well, it is.
As well, they, you know, we allowed a system of a public and private system to develop up. We were quite happy to subcontract education, health and other social policies, whether it was to the church and others. We allowed the system to develop. Why is it only now that we're suddenly the lights gone on thing? You know, maybe we should have gone and looked at this. Why wasn't the state from its own governance perspective
Because they failed to keep their people safe in relation to all of the other issues and whistleblowing and the guards and everything else. And they failed in their corporate governance of Ireland. And it's important to say that those at the front line of rehab or those at the front line of CRC do an excellent job. I was out there, and I have to say, the minute you walk in the door, you get that sense of organisation and a service being delivered and people working beyond the norm to achieve that. But the state has failed. The administration of the state has failed. And that is what causes, at the end of the day, whistleblowers. And when you take whistleblowers, you can go to the OPW, you can go to the FOSS, Una Halliday, for example.
You mentioned this during the week.
She's out on sick leave and they're forcing her in to conduct a hearing. She didn't do anything wrong. She actually did a state of service.
She worked. Yeah. She works for Solace now. Is that right? And she used to work for FOSS.
So you have people around the state and various agencies and organisations that have no work, no phone. They're not being treated properly in work. They're not being allowed to perform. And they're complaining about that. And instead of being helped, they're being penalised. That is the culture that's there. And it is that very culture that actually contaminates the whole political system when governments get elected, because they're not strong enough or big enough to turn around and say, sorry, we're not doing it our way way anymore. We're changing it. And that needs to be done. There needs to be a new type of politics that demands proper governance, proper accountability, and that the independence of GSOC or other organisations like that is achieved with full political support.
Right. John, it was the other crowd who were promising the new politics now. I have to remind you. You're on the wrong side.
I've been demanding this type of new politics going back to the time that the other crowd were in.
And I know he's going to congratulate us shortly on all that we're doing in that regard.
He might congratulate you as well on a universal healthcare plan, because the white paper has been published. We're going to talk about that, whether it'll work, in just a moment.